Reading from Bridge of Birds, a novel of an ancient China that never was, by Barry Hugert. Chapter 11, A Tale I Will Thee Tell. It was early afternoon, and dust danced in the sunlight that filtered into the monastery. The only sounds came from Li Kao and the abbot as they prepared the essence, and from bird songs that drifted with the breeze through the windows. The children had not moved so much as an eyelash since we had left, and the bonzes had been able to do no more for them than to bathe them and move them into different positions at regular intervals. It was hard to believe that the small, pale bodies could still show faint vital signs, and the parents were as silent as the children. An alchemist stove burned underneath a bubbling vial of sugared water in which Master Li had placed the root of power. The water began to turn orange, and the ginseng root took on a copperish orange color that was almost translucent, like amber. Master Li moved the root to a fresh vial that was filled with mild rice wine. The abbot heated the liquid, and as it slowly bubbled down, Master Li replaced it with the orange liquid from the first vial. Then the level of the liquid lowered until the root was barely covered, and the liquid turned saffron, and Master Li sealed the vial and placed it in a pan of boiling water. Both the liquid and the root began to turn orange black and then jet black. Only a small puddle of liquid remained, and Master Li removed the vial from the pan and opened the seal. An incredible, fresh, and pungent aroma filled the room like a whole forest of mountain herbs just after a rain.
"That's all there is to it. And now we will see what we will see," he said calmly.
The abbot parted the children's lips, and Li Kao dipped the blackened root into the liquid and carefully applied 3 drops to each tongue. 3 times the treatment was repeated, and there was just enough of the ginseng essence to go around. We waited, while the sounds of chickens and cows and water buffaloes drifted upon the breeze, and willows brushed their branches against the gray stone walls, and a woodpecker hammered in the garden. Color was returning to the pale faces. The bed covers began to lift and fall with strong, regular breathing, and warmth flushed the cold limbs. Fang's fawn sighed, and a wide smile spread across the face of Bone Helmet. All the children began to smile happily, and with a sense of humble awe, I realized that I had witnessed a medical miracle. Parents wept for joy as they embraced their sons and daughters, and the grandparents danced, and the bonzes ran to the ropes and swung lustily up and down as they rang every bell in the monastery. The abbot was dancing a jing while he bellowed, "Namo Kuan Shi Yin Bodhisattva Mahasattva," which is how good Buddhists say hallelujah. Only Li Kao remained unmoved. He walked from bed to bed, examining each child with analytical coldness, and then he signaled for me to pry Big Hong loose from his son. He bent over the boy and began testing his pulse, first the left wrist, for the functions of the heart, liver, kidneys, small intestine, gallbladder, and ureter, then the right wrist, for the lungs, stomach, parta ulta, large intestine, spleen, and vital parts. He beckoned for the abbot to come and repeat the same process and compare results. The abbot's face turned puzzled and then anxious and then desperate. He ran for his pins and began testing acupuncture and pain points with no reaction whatsoever from the children. Little Hong's color remained high and his pulse remained strong and the happy smile remained on his lips. But when Master Li lifted one of his arms and released it, the arm remained suspended in air. He moved the arm to different positions, and it stayed precisely where he placed it. The abbot grabbed Fawn and shook her violently, and she did not even register a change in her pulse. Li Kao straightened up and slowly walked back to the table and stared blankly down at the empty alchemist's vial. All eyes were fixed on him. He was immeasurably weary, and I could tell that in his tiredness he was struggling to think of words that would soften the fact that there is no such thing as an almost miracle. The root of power had almost done it, but it simply wasn't strong enough. I couldn't bear it if his eyes turned to mine. I knew that he had only one thing to tell me, and the words of the ancient Tibetan text echoed in my mind. Only one treatment is effective, and this will succeed only if the physician has access to the rarest and mightiest of all healing agents, the great root of power. I saw the terrified face of pawnbroker Fang as he swore that only one great root existed in all the world, and I heard him scream, "The Duke of Qin! It's hidden in his labyrinth!" Even an ignorant country boy knew that the Duke of Qin was 10,000 times more dangerous than the ancestress, and that copper coins do not purchase suicide. If I went after the great root, it would be on my own, and never in history had anyone returned alive from the Duke's labyrinth. I turned and walked rapidly out the door and down the maze of corridors that I knew like the back of my hand, and then I jumped from a low window to the grass below and began running across the hills. I had no goal or purpose whatsoever, or perhaps I did, in that I was subconsciously saying farewell to the village of Khufu. All I knew was that when I am depressed or frightened, I must do something physical, which is all I am good at. And if I keep at it long enough, I can usually forget my cares. I ran for hours through the hills and fields and forest, and lonely dogs began to follow me. I had quite a pack of them at my heels when my feet took me up a tiny winding path to a dense clump of shrubbery on a hillside, and I got down on my knees and wriggled through a tunnel into a small cave. The dog squeezed in after me, and we sat down upon piles of bones. They were called dragon bones, because it had once been believed that dragons periodically shed their bones as snakes shed their skins, but they actually were the shoulder bones of domestic animals that had been used for prophecy. Scapulomancy is very ancient, and the abbot had told me that the oracle bones of An Yang are the only solid proof that the semi-mythological Shang dynasty had actually existed. Do other people revert to childhood when they are frightened? I know that I did. The cave had been headquarters for youthful desperados when I was a small boy, and we had brought all important questions to the infallible dragon bones. Now I lit a fire in the old brazier and placed the poker in it. The dogs crowded around me and watched with interest while I searched for a bone with a smooth, unmarked side. I wrote yes on the left and no on the right, and I cleared my throat. "Oh, dragon, will I find the great root of power in the labyrinth of the Duke of Qin and get out of there alive?" I whispered hoarsely. I wrapped my hand in an old piece of horsehide and picked up the hot poker. The point sizzled as it bored into the bone, and the crack started slowly lifting toward the answer. Then it split neatly in half, and the left crack shot up and speared yes, while the right half impaled no. I stared at the message. I would find the root, but wouldn't live to tell the tale. I would live to tell the tale, but wouldn't find the root. I was quite upset. until it occurred to me that I was no longer 10 years old, and I blushed bright red. "Idiot," I muttered. The sun had set. Moonbeams reached into the cave and touched my left hand, and the small scar on my wrist gleamed like silver. I threw my head back and laughed. The childhood friends who had passed the knife around the circle as we became blood brothers would have died from envy had they known that the skeleton of Number 10 Ox was destined to rattle in the Duke's mysterious labyrinth. And I hugged a few dogs as I solemnly chanted the sacred vow of the 7 bloody bandits of the Dragon Bones cave. Bat shit, rat shit, 3-toed sloth shit, bones and blades and bloody oath writ. "Now that has real merit," a voice said approvingly. "It beats the scholar's oath by a mile and a half." The dogs barked excitedly as Master Lee crawled into the cave. He sat down and looked around. "Scapulomancy was a racket," he observed. "With a little practice, a soothsayer could make a bone crack any way he wanted to, or jump through a hoop, for that matter. Did you ever cheat when you were a boy?" "It would have spoiled our games," I mumbled. "Very wise," he said. "The abbot, who is also very wise, told me that I would find you here, and if not, I should simply sit and wait. Don't be ashamed of reliving your childhood, Ox, because all of us must do it now and then in order to maintain our sanity." He was carrying a large flask of wine, which he extended to me. "Have a drink, and a tale I will thee tell," he said. I sipped and choked on the fiery liquid. Li Kao reclaimed the flask and swallowed about a pint. "It was a dark and stormy night," he said, wiping his mouth with the back of his hand. "A cold wind howled, and lightning flickered across the sky like the tongues of snakes, and thunder roared like dragons, and rain fell in torrents. Piercing through the gale came the sound of wheels and hoofbeats, followed by the most dreaded sound in all China, the high-pitched hunting horns of the soldiers of the Duke of Qin." This time I choked without benefit of wine, and Li Kao pounded my back in a kindly fashion. "A mule was pulling a buggy down a mountain path at a suicidal rate, and a man and a woman were bouncing upon the seat," he said. "The woman was 9 months pregnant, and she clutched a large burlap bag while the man wielded a buggy whip. Once more, the terrible horns sounded behind them, and then a volley of arrows shot into the night. The mule staggered and fell, and the buggy crashed into a ditch. Apparently, the soldiers were after the bag that the woman carried, because the man tried to take it from her so that the soldiers would attack him while she escaped. But the woman was equally brave and refused to relinquish the bag, and they were tugging back and forth when the second volley of arrows reached them. The man fell back, mortally wounded, and the woman staggered away with the shaft of an arrow protruding from beneath her left shoulder blade, and the rain mercifully covered the small, determined figure as she crawled up the winding path that led to the monastery of Shu." Master Lee hoisted the flask and drank thirstily. I had no idea why he was telling me the story, but at least he was taking my mind off my troubles. "The arrow was her passport," he said. "It was stamped with the tiger emblem of the Duke of Qin, and the monastery of Shu hated the Duke of Qin. They did all they could for her, and with the first faint light of dawn, the tiny wail of a newborn babe lifted above the walls. The abbot and the midwife had worked a small miracle to save the child, but nothing could be done for the mother." "Brave soul," the abbot whispered, wiping the sweat from her fevered brow. "Brave rebel against the evil Duke of Qin." The midwife lifted the wailing child. 1,000 blessings, my lady, for you have given birth to a healthy son," she said.
The dying woman's nostrils twitched, and she opened her eyes. With an immense effort, she lifted a hand and pointed to the midwife. "Cow," she panted. "Lee, cow. I jerked up my head and looked wide-eyed at Master Lee, who winked at me. Tears blurred the abbot's eyes. "I hear, my daughter," he sniffled. "Your son shall be named Lee Cow." "Cow," the woman gasped. "Lee, cow. "I understand, my daughter," the abbot sobbed. "I shall raise Lee Cow as my own son, and I shall place his tiny feet upon the true path. He shall be instructed in the five virtues and excellent doctrines, and at the end of his blameless life, his spirit shall surely pass through the gates of the great void into the blessed regions of purified semblance." Master Lee swallowed another pint and offered me another sip, which produced the same choking result. The woman's eyes blazed with a strong emotion that strangely resembled fury, he said. But her strength was spent. Her eyes closed, and her hand fell limply to her side, and her soul departed to the yellow springs beneath the earth. The midwife was greatly moved, and when she whipped a small goatskin flask from her robe and drank deeply, the smell of the stuff brought a cold chill to the abbot's heart. That revolting odor could only come from the finest paint remover and worst wine ever invented. "Cao Liang," repeat, "Cao Liang." Was it possible that the dying woman had not been naming a baby, but demanding a snort? It was indeed possible. Ox, heredity is a remarkable thing. And it further developed that she had not been pursued by the Duke's soldiers because she was an heroic rebel, but because she and her husband had stolen the regimental payroll. My parents were the most notorious crooks in China, and my mother could have escaped quite easily if she had not tried to battle my father for the loot. Master Lee shook his head wonderingly. "I never knew my parents. Yet at the tender age of 5, I stole the abbot's silver belt buckle. When I was 6, I made off with his jade inkstone. On my 8th birthday, I stole the gold tassels from the abbot's best hat, and I still take pride in the feat because he happened to be wearing the hat at the time. When I was 11, I exchanged the abbot's bronze incense burners for a couple of jars of wine, and got royally drunk in the alley of flies. And at 13, I borrowed the silver candlesticks and tiptoed into the alley of 400 forbidden delights." "Youth!" cried Master Lee. "How sweet, yet sadly swift, pass the halcyon days of our innocence." He buried his nose in his wine flask again and burped comfortably. "The abbot of the monastery of Shu was truly heroic," he said. "He had vowed to raise me as his own, and he kept his word. And so well did he pound an education into my head that I eventually did quite well in my Qin Shi examination. When I left the monastery, it was not in pursuit of scholarship, however, but in pursuit of an unparalleled career in crime. It was quite a shock for me to discover that crime was so easy that it was boring. I reluctantly turned to scholarship, and by the accident of handing in some good papers, I was entombed in the Forest of Culture Academy as a research fellow, and I escaped from that morgue by bribing the court eunuchs to get me an appointment as a military strategist. I managed to lose a few battles in the approved manner, and then I became one of the emperor's wandering persuaders, and then governor of Yu. And it was in the last occupation that the light finally dawned. I was trying to get enough evidence to hang the loathsome dog-meat general of Wusan. but he was so slippery that I couldn't prove a thing. Fortunately, the Yellow River was flooding again, and I managed to convince the priests that the only way to appease the river god was through the custom of the ancients. So, the dog-meat general disappeared beneath the waves tied to a gray horse. I was sorry about the horse, but it was the custom, and I tendered my resignation. Solving crime, I had belatedly discovered, was at least 100 times more difficult than committing it. So I hung the sign of a half-closed eye above my door, and I have never regretted it. I might add that I have also never left a case half-finished. I gulped noisily, and I suppose that the hope in my eyes was shining as brightly as the moon. "Why do you think I've been telling you this?" said Master Lee. "I have a very good reason to be angry at the Duke of Qin, since one of his ancestors killed my parents. And if nothing else, my various careers have uniquely prepared me for the task of stealing ginseng roots." He patted my shoulder. "Besides, I'd take you for a great-grandson any day," he said. "I would never dream of allowing you to go out on your own to be slaughtered. Get some sleep, and we'll leave at dawn." Tears blurred my eyes. Master Lee called to the dogs and crawled from the cave, and they gambolled happily around him as he danced down the path toward the monastery, waving his wine flask. The high-pitched, four-tone, liquid-voweled song of High Mandarin drifted back upon the night breeze. "Among the flowers with a flask of wine, I drink all alone, no one to share. Raising my flask, I welcome the moon, and my shadow joins us, making a threesome. As I sing, the moon seems to sway back and forth. As I dance, my shadow goes flopping about. As long as we're sober, we'll enjoy one another, and when we get drunk, we'll go our own ways. Thus we'll pursue our own avatars, and we'll all meet again in the River of Stars." I wished that I could have seen him when he was 90. Even now, his leaps and capers were magnificent in the moonlight.